welcome to the Monkeys Fighting Robots podcast with Matthew Sardo.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
Holy sh! They're actually monkeys fighting robots!
You can follow us on Twitter at monkeys_robots and on Instagram at monkeys fighting robots. Make sure to download and review our podcast from iTunes and Stitcher. And now, here's your host, Matt.
Welcome to the 111th episode of Monkeys Fighting Robots. Today's episode is going to be shink, shink, shink. EJ and I are talking about the Great Wall and Logan. One last ride. Time. Ride.
The last hurrah of Logan, basically.
I'm your host, Matthew Sardo. I'm also the co-founder of MonkeysFightingRobots.com. Joining me in the banter is my co-host, movie critic EJ Marino.
You know, reading the script, I didn't know what the shink, shink, shink was. And then I heard you say it. I'm like, oh, it's the claw noise. Because I was like, Matt, I don't know what this is. I'm just going to go with it and just be like, yep, cool. Matt's the boss. I'll just say whatever.
So Logan comes out tonight. Our press screening is tonight. We're recording the first half of the show right now. It's 3:33. And tonight at 7:30, we're going to watch it. And then we're going to come back. And we're going to record our Logan review. So this is going to be like a part A, part B episode. I'm very excited because I don't think we've ever done this before.
No, I think this is like the first time we've kind of taken a break in one. We've done two-part episodes where we reviewed like, oh, this is the before and this is the after. No, this is like the first.
No, because we're like right now, like I'm like hyped. Like this is the first movie that I'm hyped for the 2017 year for, as a pop culture nerd, as a superhero nerd, as like, I don't know if I'm a Wolverine nerd, but I've read a shit ton of Wolverine in my day. But no, like this is the movie that's going to start off the season of superhero movies, and I'm pumped.
Yeah, this is what a great way to start off the superhero season. I think it's kind of what Deadpool was last year. It was like, here's this big kind of kick in the door, and then we had to deal with what the rest of the year was, and that was interesting.
Deadpool kicked the door open, and everything else just kicked us in the dick.
Yeah, we just kind of like stumbled through the door after Deadpool.
Speaking of Deadpool, the one-year anniversary just passed by. Is that newsworthy? Is it not newsworthy? Managing editor Larry Taylor and I got into a vicious text message battle yesterday. Like, you know how vicious it was?
It was in caps?
No. I put my phone down and went to my computer to type my text messaging. That's how much information I wanted to put out. Because, like, it was beyond thumbs.
Oh, boy.
I needed two hands to type my comments back.
And that's how you know it's serious.
Newsworthy or not newsworthy?
I'm torn on it because I don't love the film. I've been kind of vocal about me not loving it, especially when it got to like award season and it kept popping up again. I was just like, oh, I thought we were done. It's newsworthy because we want it to be newsworthy. We're talking about it now. So I guess in like the theory of it, it now is newsworthy because we are talking about it. But yeah, it's cool. It broke records. It did what it needed to do.
The argument that Larry brought off, he's like, oh, should we talk about Finding Dory at the one-year anniversary? And I was like, no, Finding Dory and Deadpool are apples and oranges. Like, Deadpool actually set some records. It sort of put a ripple in the status quo of superhero films.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you stopped using, or like, not just you, but the whole, it's changing the superhero genre. I will say that it put ripples. It did, like, shake things up, but I don't think it changed anything. We'll see what Logan is tonight to see if it is a full change and if Fox is going to go this darker, more adult route or what they're going to do. But yeah, it was notable.
I mean, we've been talking about Batman versus Superman for the past 365 days.
See, and that's where I think, like how you were saying with something like Finding Dory, it's because Batman versus Superman is something talk aboutable. Like, look at the Civil War. I think that it happened. Everyone's like, well, Black Panther was cool. And it kind of just
Spider-Man was cool.
It kind of just fizzled out where Batman v Superman, a Deadpool, those lasted throughout the year, and I think are going to last throughout time.
Well,
just because
that's the thing is, it, like you talked about, it just fizzled out or it was just average. Where Deadpool was really good and changed things for the good. Batman v Superman, Bukkake might have changed things for the bad or not. I mean, it was polarizing. Where Civil War, a Disney flick, was just straight down the middle to make as much money as possible.
Yeah, and for being straight down the middle, it's not as crazy memorable, I think. I think there's been other films from that brand that had that stick-out moment. And no, it was definitely a good year for moments like that and movies like that to do something like it. And that's why it's notable, and that's why we're still talking about it. Well, I think we're going to talk about Batman v Superman's 1 year. We'll see if there's crazy DC rumors around it to like tag into it. But no, I think Deadpool, it deserves that, I guess. As much as I want to be a stickler about it, I guess it does deserve the talking about.
Hi, Larry. It's 2-1 on whether or not Deadpool is newsworthy 1 year anniversary. So feel free to chime in the comment section, Larry, so we can battle you full keyboard. Another topic that we brought up last week, and it's been my kind of conversation piece that I've been talking about for a while, is Harley Quinn and the attraction of Harley Quinn, and then the fact that I think that there's a certain age where you probably shouldn't be promoting Harley Quinn 2, because we were talking about that cartoon, and I'm like, listen, we shouldn't be promoting Harley Quinn to 6-year-olds. Like, I feel like that just shouldn't happen. But I talked to the comic book editor, Anthony Composto. His girlfriend is a huge fan of Harley Quinn, and we've talked about this before, but she finally, like, turned the light switch on in my head. Like, they had a text message thread that Anthony shared with me, and this is what Brooke said. Brooke said, of course she's not a role model, she's a villain, but she personifies the craziness all women feel at some point or another to the ultimate extreme, which is why she's so popular. And I was like, oh, I get it now.
And I've always gotten it. Something she.
Well, why didn't you tell me if you got it?
Well, because it's not.
I mean, like, we're on a podcast together.
This isn't for me to explain to you. This is something you just kind of had to like come to on your own. Because trust me, I didn't get it either, and I didn't get her attraction to a younger community. And then I started thinking, I'm like, look how many little boys are obsessed with the Joker. Do I think they should be obsessed with the Joker? No, because I think he's one of the like most foul characters in all of pop culture. So I do think it's weird that like there's an attraction to him as well, and on the opposite gender end. So yeah, Harley just, she's just always been there. But you know, she does represent something, especially me as a gay man. I relate to Harley. I like this craziness because I can't relate to someone.
Is it the fishnets?
Joker. It's the fishnets. It's the trashy makeup. It's me as a drag queen, basically.
No, my battle with young boys is Darth Vader.
That is one that it's very puzzling, because I'm like,
he's killed kids.
He's blown up planets. Like, especially now seeing the prequels, I'm like,
he killed little kids. Yeah,
like,
all of them dead.
Yeah. Yeah. He's one that's, it's hard. And they're like, well, that's what the prequels were for, to justify him. I'm like, well, yeah, the third one, we had baby killing. I'm like, that didn't help your case, guys.
Yeah,
like,
it doesn't justify his redemption, because honestly, like, he was a dick for a long time. And then 1 second of like, oh, I'm not a dick. Like, no, you're still dying. Like,
yeah.
In the court of law, you're still getting it.
Yeah. You can't plead insanity unless it was because of the sand annoying him and all that stuff.
It's so dry.
That is probably, I think, my favorite moment from Star Wars history, is that whole sand rant. I'm like, thank you for living on.
Oh, man. So, I mean, I was trying to think of, like, who Harley Quinn is in, like, the male guys, the view of him. And I forgot that we had the whole 80s. So you can pick anyone, like Bruce Willis, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Stallone, any of those big machismo heroes probably embodies what guys were looking for. And if we're going crazy mode, and this is the thing that bothers me, and I now kind of understand it, is the douchebags at like Fight Club, Tyler Durden.
Well, yeah, oh, absolutely. That is the male version of the Harley Quinns. But even in a more refined taste, I don't particularly love James Bond. I think a lot of the older James Bond, he was kind of sleazy and just kind of like the way he talked to women. I'm like, I don't think little boys should like this cool Bond. I know he's changed as times went on.
My grandparents, I always go back to this, is my grandparents had HBO. They had cable. So I was, when we went over to grandma and grandpa's house, I was always flipping to HBO. I was like, what am I going to watch? And that's where I watched Space Camp like 400 million times. But the big 80s movie that was on during that time was Octopussy. And I watched that Roger Moore Bond. And as a kid, like, Bond is not entertaining at all.
No. You don't get the nuances of, like, the sleaze and all that, or the Octopussy joke. No, I do think it is.
Is it a joke? I mean, because it's in the title.
Okay, not a joke, the gag, I guess, because I think that's more of something that happens as a title or anything. It's like a running gag. That's what I always thought was so weird, that I think the Bond movies have always been campy. I don't know why they got super serious, but that's a topic for the next Bond movie to come out.
Are they going
to
make one?
It's never dying. They're still trying to beat Godzilla for the longest running franchise. Until one of them is done, they're like going to keep fighting it out.
Oh, man. The Bond movies, I mean, I like the Mission Impossible. I've kind of worn off Jason Bourne because I don't think they know how to tell a story anymore with Jason Bourne. I'm trying to think of the long running franchises that I would like, that I continue. I'm like the Transformers movies.
I'm here for each of the Fast and the Furious movies. I wasn't, Tokyo Drift is the only one I like dipped out on, but look, they're stupid and cheesy and funny, but there's nothing problematic about them. They're not trying to change cinema. They're just there. I'll enjoy them.
I'm over The Rock. I'm done. Even though The Rock.
Me and Dwayne Johnson, we'll see what Baywatch does this year.
Speaking of popcorn flicks, was The Great Wall a popcorn flick?
Like a stale popcorn flick.
Yeah.
Ooh, maybe that was too mean. I don't know. I don't hate the movie that
saucy.
Much. I don't hate the movie that much.
It's one of those films where I was like, okay, Great Wall of China. Like, I need it to be either really bad or really good. And it's another one of those. I was just like, oh, like it's for a movie about battles. I feel like there wasn't any battles.
No, I think there was this awesome like fight scene at the beginning where we first saw how the Great Wall ran and how the military was there. I'm like, oh, this is cool. Oh, there's not another one. Oh, there's more talking. Oh, there's a lot of talking. Oh, they keep talking, and no, there's a battle. No, it's over. Yeah, it's very odd of how this movie was paced. Like you said, for a battle movie, quote unquote, there wasn't a lot of fighting.
I did really like the scissors on the Great Wall.
Oh, that was something I was just like, oh, man. Actually, I will say every kind of weapon that they used at the Great Wall was pretty awesome. Like, there wasn't one thing that I'm like, no, I don't. I like it all. I like the fireballs. I like the crane girls with the spikes. I like the archers. I really like things about this. That's my problem with this. Like, I'm not mad at you. I'm just disappointed. Like, that's how I feel.
No,
because
there was a lot of really cool things, and I was fine with the talking until it got to the end, and I was like, oh,
there was a lot of talking.
They tunneled through, and they're not like, it's not about the Great Wall anymore. Like, the Great Wall, the point of the movie was about holding your, like, I thought the point of the movie was like holding your ground at the Great Wall, and we're gonna hold it like the Alamo, we're gonna hold it till the last, and the Great White Hope, Matt Damon, was gonna be that archer that comes through to like help us just hopefully finish things out, and like we just barely keep the wall up and we save the day. But no, like, they broke through the wall. Spoiler alert.
Oh, yeah. Spoiler alert. Yeah, it becomes the last emperor by the end of it. It's like, I don't want to see the golden child. Get out of here. Like, I did not understand the need for this big city. Like I said, like you said, I think it would have been really cool, like a Game of Thrones plot where it's just like, it is the wall. This is what we know. This is what it is. I don't care what's beyond it. We defend it. Awesome.
I love the opening where they're like, the Great Wall has legends and myths and fantasies. And like, this is one of those legends, like, and so they established the world you were going into really well with just a few words flickering on the screen. And I was like, okay, I'm in. I'm going to get the colors. I'm going to get the medieval Power Ranger theme that was going on there.
Yeah, I didn't understand. Yeah, I don't know if you've ever played this video game, but it reminded me of Dynasty Warriors, where you have like these like clans of like this Chinese clans. It was crazy of like how cartoony Power Rangers it was. I was like, this is cool. I like the art direction of this.
And I kind of like the monsters. And originally I was like, horde of lizards. I don't get it. But then they actually put some thought behind it. There's some thought behind every character. And they talk and they kind of flush them out. But there just isn't enough action in this film.
No, and you did bring up, everyone is fleshed out. Everyone's kind of talked about a little bit. But there's not enough. And I think that's kind of the problem with it for its running time. I feel like I didn't walk away with a full piece. I was like, I would have liked to see that. Oh, we have Willem Dafoe. Oh, he's not in it anymore. There's just a lot happening that I'm
like,
did
he blow himself up?
I think Willem Dafoe blew himself up, which he deserved it. You said before, I think he's the villain. I don't think you were right that he was the villain, but he wasn't. He was pretty much an ass.
He was useless.
Yeah, like,
what was he doing there?
I don't understand. I think we could have gave that role to another awesome Asian actor to fill in that, just something there. I'm like,
honestly, like, Willem Dafoe, that plot line didn't even need to be in there.
No, not at all.
They should have just been convinced, like, okay, we got to defend the wall. Like, okay, we're going to defend the wall. And then you had those two guys, because when they were together, that was the best battle where Matt Damon jumps down on the ground floor. He just dives off the Great Wall. It's like, oh, he has nothing tied to him. Oh, he's going to land on the chain. That's some good CG there. But then he starts fighting him, and then the concept of how he was fighting him in the mist with the listen for the sound, all of a sudden, like, there was a lot of thought put into this. And then, you know, his buddy comes in at the last second to help him out. And then, like, because even that, like, it was a heady fight scene, because what they were doing is they were throwing the axes not towards the monsters because they wanted the monsters to attack that to give them the shot. Like, it was well developed and it was like well choreographed, but we just didn't get enough of it at the end.
Yeah, and I think that's what happens. I think the director's a great director. He did a film like Hero with Jet Li, which was just stunning. The scale of it was gorgeous, and it's a well planned. You could tell it's a good director behind it. I just don't know what happened in the final product that really didn't make it a fulfilling piece, because I was hoping it was either going to be like insanely bad Gods of Egypt level from last year, where I'm like, okay, this is trash, but like entertaining. And it wasn't great though either. It was just like, it's the worst kind of movie to review, where it was just like, it was mediocre.
Oh man. And there was so many different things with this film that like, where I want, again, you were talking about things getting explained. Like, okay, you had the archers, like, and the girls were, the reason why the girls were the divers were because they were light, right?
Yes, because they said, because usually men are too heavy to do that, like, diving role.
Okay, and then you had the red guys were the archers, and then you had the infantry, and then you had the bus boy.
Who was part of, because, like, everyone who was in the black armor is, like, a Foot Clan member, basically. They're just, like, servants.
And then, like, that guy, like, that was a whole storyline with the bus boy of nobody spoke the same language, yet they bonded.
Well, that was something actually I will applaud. I think this movie had a lot of things, little things I can applaud, where he didn't instantly walk up to an Asian character and they spoke English. There were some characters that didn't understand him, and that was refreshing, where I'm like, look, we have one main character in this like Chinese dynasty who speaks English. That makes sense, one or two, and I thought that was good. I thought it was like, for as much crap as this was getting for whitewashing and the white savior, I'm like, oh, white people were pretty useless in this movie. Like, they didn't really need Matt Damon in this. He just kind of was there. Like,
And then at the end of the film, like, he gets his two chances to save the day. And then the girl, the Asian girl, is like, listen, I'm going to take care of this now.
Yeah, and that's where I really liked. That's where I think if this was done by a white director, I do think that probably would have gone a little differently. But no, I think with a Chinese director, and this market is so heavy to China, that was such a smart move to have an awesome chick do awesome shit. I was really, really happy with how it was handled. Now, did I want more of her battle at the end? Did I want more of her in general, actually? That was someone that...
Well,
I'm
no,
like,
you have all the Street Fighter games to play with her.
Oh, wow, did you just call this girl Chun-Li? Damn.
She looked exactly like Chun-Li.
She did, but she was really, really pretty. There was times where I guess that was just the whole thing. Everyone was really gorgeous other than Matt Damon's, like, grossly dirty character, and I'm like, oh, everyone's stunning, and then I'm like, oh, we turned to Matt Damon, he's gross, oh, he looks like he smells, and then I go back to the Asian woman and she's like flawless, and I'm like, damn, this movie's confusing.
No, they have, I mean, the Asians have really nice skin.
Yeah, especially in this like 4K movie, man. Everyone was just like, I was just like blown away. I'm like, everyone looks so good, damn it, I want Asian skin.
Matt Damon's hair wasn't as distracting as I thought it was going to be.
Ooh, I don't know if we watched the same movie, because I wrote on our script, my three favorite characters were Matt Damon, Matt Damon's wig, and Matt Damon's really bad accent that was spotty and left throughout the movie. But no, man, I guess it was that beginning dreadlock matted hair he had that I was like, oh, this is gross. And then he cut it off and I'm like, now you just look like Tom Cruise from The Last Samurai.
I did notice when he lost his accent in the last, like, 15 minutes of the movie.
In the first 15, and then like a 15 minute. It came and went. I'm like, one, where are you from in Europe? I know he's European. We found the Pedro Pascal character was Spaniard. And I'm like, but where's Matt Damon from? No, not Sweden. He doesn't sound Swedish. He doesn't sound English. I'm like, what the hell are you, Matt Damon? But I was entertained because it was like the guessing game with Matt Damon's spotty accent.
But another thing that they did well in explaining was all the different armies that he fought for, because he was like an assassin and he was bought and paid for. So he rattles off very quickly 6 or 7 battles that he was in and who he fought for and who was paying him. And I was like, oh, and again, it was like 30 seconds. You were like, oh, I understand this character. I understand what's going on. They just needed like a better battle or some sort of, what I needed for this film to work is I needed a wizard in charge of the lizards. Like, I needed a human that was in charge, that was a bad person.
And that's what I thought. There was kind of an older, like, the strategist character who, he was this kind of older Asian character. I'm like, I think he's kind of working with, I think he's trying to do it. And I'm like, we didn't really go that route. There was a lot of things that this movie could have done that, like, spice it up a little bit. But I will say, even that explanation they did with Matt Damon's character, it helped it from being the white savior character that I think everyone was worried. And it was like a good redemption story for his character. It was like, no, he's a piece of trash. he's not here to be a savior. He's just kind of here for redemption. And I thought that was a refreshing tale for this kind of thing, because I think there was a lot of controversy concerns about it before.
Yeah, but is it the controversy coming from the Tumblr generation, or is it coming, like, if you looked at the director, you looked at all the people that were in it, like, I wouldn't look at this as a whitewashed film. Like, it, whereas I like The Last Samurai, but he becomes the hero of the tale.
Well, that's how I felt about Pacific Rim, was another one where I'm like, this is a heavy influenced Asian thing. And I'm like, a white Charlie Hunnam has to be the greatest thing ever. And it's like, it just felt weird. And I felt like, I think you are right. I think this was called out by the wrong people for not knowing too much. Kind of what they did with Split, where everyone's like, oh, this movie's going to make fun of mental illness. And then you see it, and I'm like, no, mental illness is like a superpower now. Like, so I do think this is a good example of, like, don't judge a movie before it comes out. Like, wait till you see it and then get angry.
Yeah, because, I mean, Matt Damon is the biggest name on it.
Yeah.
So you got to bring the audience to the film so it makes money. I mean, I get why he's billed. Because besides William Dafoe and the guy from Game of Thrones, but no, that William Dafoe and then the guy from Game of Thrones, I lose names after William Dafoe. And I thought a few other people, I looked and I was like, are those people from Marco Polo? But I couldn't tell if they were that. Because Marco Polo, for me, is an amazing Netflix series, and it deals with the Great Wall, and it's Genghis Khan, and it's amazing. It's a healthy dose of Game of Thrones if you don't have Game of Thrones, so I highly recommend it.
Mostly, I'm excited to see how I'm going to feel about this at the end of the year, if I'm even going to remember the Great Wall by December when we start doing the year-end countdowns and all that stuff.
You'll remember it because it'll hit HBO or Netflix by then, and that's where anybody who's listening to this should probably view this film, because I don't think you should give it. I don't think you should pay to go see this film.
Yeah, I'm usually that pretentious film kid, and I'm like, no, you should spend money on all films. No, the most money you should spend on $2.99, Redbox it. You'll be fine. It's a good viewing, but nothing to run out to theaters and get all that money for.
You know what I'm excited about seeing and what I'm probably going to go see multiple times and give me lots of money to is Logan, because we're going to see Logan tonight.
I'm going to try to keep my excitement at a low, because I'm going to go into all the superhero movies this year just even excitement, not get too crazy, and we'll see how my excitement is after.
Yeah, but it's going to go shink, 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 shink.
Yes, now that I know
what
the
shink,
shink. Oh, no,
wait, let me think about it. So it's going to go shink, shink, and then she goes shink, shink.
And then we'll have screams,
it's a little
blood,
higher,
yes.
Yeah. Like, it's been a while since we've had a little girl kill lots of people.
Yeah, I'm very excited for this. I don't. Maybe that one Hannah movie that came out, but the next one I think of is Leon the Professional, and that was '90s.
There
so.
Was Kick-Ass with Hit Girl, she was my favorite. The comic book version of Hit Girl is so much better than the TV, than the film version of her. But there was a lot of death involved with that. But Logan tonight. So this is where we're gonna end part one, part A, 1B. I don't know what this is. I don't know what this is, but we're gonna end it now, and then we're gonna come back 6 hours from now and finish up the podcast. Are we making predictions?
I'm going to predict that the movie's going to be awesome. That's going to be the only thing I'll say, because I don't want to cloud my judgment with anything.
I am going to predict that Fox, in general, I can't stand their aesthetic for superhero films. Like, even Deadpool, I wasn't a fan of the aesthetic. There's something about their color palette, their lighting, or how they do things that I just don't get behind. Cameos, any cameos that's popping out? Whose funeral do they attend?
I'm curious. I think it might be a Magneto funeral. We'll see. I think we might get a Mr. Sinister cameo homage reference, because supposedly he's going to be involved with Deadpool and also the new X-Men film. So I think that he might be in this, but I think you are right, though. I think this is going to be a massive change of aesthetic for the whole X-Men franchise. And it sucks that this is kind of the last call and that we're doing this thing. And it's like,
oh, we finally get it right.
We finally get it right. Goodbye, guys. Have a great day. That's the X-Men story, basically.
Because did you see the video where he's in the limo, where he's the limo driver, and just the way they filmed that? I was like, oh, this is really pretty. I wish they would have done that all the time. This is going to be really frustrating if it's amazing.
I don't know. We'll see, because I'm excited for it, but I don't want to be too excited because I don't want to be let down.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you in 6 hours. EJ, we started this podcast at 3:30. It is now 10:37 Thursday night. We both drove home from Logan. We've seen Logan, and we're quickly processing what we saw. And my immediate reaction is it is a top five superhero film of all time.
I'm trying to like digest everything I saw. Now, that movie threw a lot at me for me to be like, let me give an instant reaction to it. It's really hard because there's so much to take in. I think my first takeaway from it is I don't ever want to see another X-Men movie again. This was perfect. I don't know how we're ever going to follow up an X-Men movie. Hell, even some superhero movies are going to have trouble trying to follow this.
I've never been a huge fan of the first iteration of the Fox X-Men films. The first X-Men film was kind of like hokey to begin with. X2 is supposed to be the pinnacle. And I was like, okay, that's supposed to be the best like Wolverine we've seen kind of thing. X-Men Last Stand, you know, shits all over the place. X-Men Origins Wolverine is just a god-awful movie. The Wolverine's decent. Then kind of First Class comes in and reinvigorates the franchise. And then you have Days of Future Past, which is a good film. And I thought that was like one of the better like Wolverine films that I've seen. The cameo of Wolverine in X-Men Apocalypse is pretty awesome, but X-Men Apocalypse isn't a good film. And then Logan shows up. And we're going to skip right over Deadpool. We're skipping right over it because that movie just became a joke, as you quoting you, after seeing Logan.
And that's, you know, I know Deadpool is supposed to be kind of like the comical cousin of all these X-Men movies, but for it to get all this credit for changing the genre and using the R rating, Logan just looked at it and said, that's cute, cool. That, you know, we did talk about would have Logan got an R rating if it wasn't for Deadpool? I don't think it mattered because I think the movie they made had no – I don't think anything Deadpool did would have changed this film. I think the story was meant to be told the way it was, and I think they would have tried to make this the first R rating one, if not, because the story they told needed to be dark, and it was.
Well, the Wolverine character, though his fighting style lends to an R rating. Like it's hard to show Wolverine slicing and dicing somebody when you can only show a certain amount of blood. You really can't show that carnage that's involved with what's going on right away. I mean, the first scene coming out of the box, they were like, hey, this is a different Wolverine movie than you've ever watched before.
And that's what it felt. I think starting from the opening credits and then getting into the film, it just felt so different next to the X-Men movies. And then you start seeing like the actual violence in this. And it doesn't feel gratuitous just to be gratuitous, which is I'm a fan of gore. I like seeing all this blood and all this stuff. But the way they used it, it was mature. And it was like, this is exactly what you need to see to get this scene done. And I really applaud that from the first thing where you kind of see him like slice through the top of someone's head, basically. Just the stuff he did, the kills in this movie were awesome to see.
And we just saw John Wick, which John Wick kind of seems gratuitous and like they're trying to invent new ways of killing people. And I feel like the body count in this is pretty much up there with John Wick, but it was just stylized a lot better to where you weren't, I don't know. There was something about the death scenes in this, and this is a weird conversation that we're having right now. There was something different between the death scenes in John Wick compared to the death scenes in Wolverine. And it could be the knives because it's more of a personal kill. So you're more involved with what's going on. And then just the Wolverine's a primal character where like John Wick's methodical. Like you said, he's kind of Batman methodical. This is very emotion was just running through the whole film and through all the death scenes.
And I definitely do think this comes with a maturity. I think it's very odd to compare them to, just other than the amount of death scenes and the body count. That's probably the only thing similar. Just because the way death was handled in this film, I think in John Wick, something like that, it's more fun as death can be. And you get to see like, oh, damn, look at John Wick. Every murder in this movie had to be done for something, like you said, personal. Everything had attachment. Even if it was some lackey goonie getting killed, you cared because it was all about Logan protecting Laura or Laura being a badass, which I can't wait to talk about her. I fell in love with an actress in 2 seconds of her being on screen. Just such a badass chick there.
Daphne Keene?
Daphne Keene, just her performance as Laura/X-23, one of the best things I think I've seen in such a long time from a child actor, from an X-Men character, and just from a character in film in general.
I was blown away, and there's a conversation between her and Logan probably two-thirds through the way, or maybe
yeah,
almost.
She's pretty silent most of the film.
No, it's kind of a silent film. I mean, I feel like Wolverine's like, hey, I don't want to kill you, and people keep pushing. It was one of those things where it's like, I don't want to be the monster I am, but you keep pushing me. And the only voices I kind of remember are Professor X, and then, you know, the Reaver, the bad guy, Donald Pierce. Was that it? Boyd Holbrook?
Yes, Donald Pierce was the bad guy's name.
Like, those are the guy in Caliban. I kind of remember him, but I remember, like, the bad guy, Professor X, those being, like, the main voices. And then Wolverine really, Hugh Jackman really doesn't have to say anything because he's like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, you already know this, like, from body language and what's going on and how the fighting styles were. He's like, I don't want to be doing what we're doing right now at any point in time. And he's like, okay, you pushed me across the line. Time for me to take care of business. And it's so in my head, I never really heard Hugh Jackman talk.
And I think that's why this is probably one of my favorite Hugh Jackman performances from out his entire career, if not my favorite Wolverine performance for sure. Just because of, like you said, he didn't have a lot of lines. And when he did speak, it had a lot of weight to it. And he did deliver some good monologues. And you got to see his heart. But it was just the silent things he would do, just the nods at her, the little half smirk he would have when he would see her do something. It was just – he really acted in this film. And I think it was credit to the director for getting that out of him. Credit to Hugh Jackman for being like, look, this is the time for me to deliver the best performance I can. And he did. He saved it. We kind of joked about this. It's like, they really did save the best for last for this one. They waited a lot to give us something this perfect.
I mean, I just rattled off the X-Men universe. And I mean, when did we started in 2000
to 2000. Oh, wow.
July 14th, 2000 was the first X-Men movie when we first saw Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. Here we are, 16 plus years later, and we finally get the Wolverine we've been trying to get for the past 16 years. And we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We hit the 7th film before we got the best Wolverine.
Which is really sad, because I do feel if this film would have came before even 2000, kind of when Blade was coming out, I think we could have got something this dark and this awesome a little earlier. But just the time period it came with is when, like, all these superhero films started getting glossy and marketable and mainstream. So it did take us a while to get to a point. So I do think as long as we waited, it needed to happen. And I'm glad, because I think it made me enjoy this even more, being like, cool, I've liked this before and now I love this finally.
One of my biggest issues with the X-Men franchise is the aesthetic that they have. It feels kind of plasticky and fake. The first X-Men movie just bothers me. Even the X-Men Apocalypse, when they start putting costumes on and things go on, you know, Quicksilver is the only person I like in that film right there. But James Mangold gave this a completely different feel than any other X-Men film we've seen. And did you find out if he actually filmed on film yet, or there was a grain to the film?
It definitely felt like film. And I think it was an aesthetic choice from it goes down. And I know this sounds so crazy, but it's such a filmmaker snob thing where, like, the score made it feel like it was shot on film. And everything about this felt so vintage and so old. And I really, really appreciate this. And yeah, like you said, the X-Men films are a little glossy. They're a little plasticky, a little over the top. I've always liked it. I think that's their aesthetic and it's always different. But this was I can't think of a superhero film that reminds me of this. I think something with The Dark Knight was a good thing where, like, a lot of the colors were good. It wasn't as glossy. But no, this was definitely one of the best looking superhero films I've seen in such a long time.
They even show you this in the film itself, but this is more of a Western than a superhero film.
Yeah, I will say it's a Western, it's a dark drama. I think superhero films should be able to go to different genres. I get tired when superhero movies are just superhero movies. Oh, we have a big beam of light in the sky.
No, because, like, I mean, the Marvel film, the franchises have always tried to be they try to be different. Like, the Ant-Man film was kind of a caper film, you know, and they try to use different genres and put the superheroes in there. But this is the first time where, like, you're like, this is a Western, like, solid.
Well, yeah, I do think the MCU has tried, where, like, Ant-Man is kind of this film and the other films have kind of like Doctor Strange is more of that, like, 70s like thing. But they didn't really go that full extra mile where this lived and breathed the genre it was trying to homage. And I really appreciate that. I really felt it. And I think that's what made this the most real, where, like, something like Ant-Man, yes, it's trying to be this caper heist film, but it didn't like kick it there. I'm like, oh, okay. This was like, nope, this is a Western. Nope, this is a really cool dark drama and something so different. I think that's what I really was happy to see.
And the use of the R rating was there. We talked about the violence and how that took Wolverine to a whole nother level. The dialogue and the banter between Wolverine or Hugh Jackman and Professor X, Patrick Stewart, they used the R rating perfectly with the banter going back and forth. And there were certain scenes where you're like, this makes sense. If it was a PG-13 movie, this would sound dumb. This wouldn't work. It would bring it down a notch. And the use of the R rating and with the words that they were using in the banter or the scenes just worked so well.
Yeah, it felt like adults having a conversation in an adult movie. I think sometimes with some superhero movies, even movies I like Batman v Superman, it just feels like cartoony dialogue just to get things happening. There's a time where he just calls him like an old bastard or something. Just the dialogue, hearing Patrick Stewart say the F word, there's just so many little things that I'm like, God, this feels so real and so mature. And I think that's the one thing I was looking forward to, this was something more mature, something more grounded. And I like to see that this didn't have a lot of CGI in it. Things like that, that I'm like, thank you for making something like this. Finally, James Mangold. I've been waiting for this kind of movie forever.
And when I watched the film for the first time, because I'm definitely going to see it multiple times, there's the setup that happens, the first act, and then the second act. There is a first kind of chase scene, but then there's a second happening in the second act. And I'm trying to get this out without spoiling it for you. But what I saw there made me realize that we're hitting a different territory and of a film of a Wolverine universe and everything like that. I was like, oh, it's on. They are not holding back with what they could do with the film. And I'm talking like just meta and just the heaviness of the film. And then also the, how do I say this without spoiling it? The nobody's safe, you know, like nobody is safe at all. And I'm everybody in the room. I was like, wow. And after that happened, I was like, where do you go from here? And then that's where they had the good use of the F word where, and it's one of the better moments where, and I don't know if this is spoiler or not spoiler, so stop listening. Wolverine beats a pickup truck with a shovel. And that, scene right there, it was just, I was like, wow, this is, and it just went on. And I was like, oh my God, the heaviness to this, the weight of it. I was like, so good. And that little, and we're talking about Hugh Jackman beating a car with a shovel. Just, and it was a very powerful scene.
Well, and I think, and we're kind of talking about the using the R rating and how it was good in that scene. But I think there are scenes where someone like, Laura, Logan would be angry and kill somebody, and the way they would just hack it away with them with their claws, you felt that anger, you felt that rage, you felt that sadness, and that was something I don't think we could have seen in a PG-13 version of it, just how brutal it was. And it wasn't always that brutal, but it was, there's certain moments where they're like, I'm fucking pissed right now, and I'm like, God, that felt so real and so amazing, and I loved that so much.
And I have a daughter. Like now, I have a daughter now. My kid's like a year and a month, 13 months now. And I was
don't be one of those parents who count the months.
I know, and she's 35 months now. but no, I was like, wonder if Alice and I are gonna go on a road trip to South Dakota. Like I was just sitting there, I'm like, because I was just that bond. Like when you become a father, or you in this case, like. You know, there's just always this, you know, from the trailers, like, oh, this could be Logan's kid. There's a connection. So there's that. You already know this drama going in. I'm not spoiling this for you. And I'm trying to look up Daphne Keene's age because I am so impressed with her.
And this was her first film because she got the awesome, I love seeing this in a movie because you know they're going to show out. She got the awesome introducing Daphne Keene. And I'm like, this is her first film. And then seeing it in there, I'm like, girl, you've been doing this for decades, it feels like.
Well, she was in a show called The Refugees. It looks like she's 11. Or maybe I'm talking about 11 from... No. Paternal, talented kid, a sci-fi star, Daphne Keene, the 11-year-old actress looking likely to run circles around Hugh Jackman. They're even already talking about an X-23 spinoff. You got to let her age a little bit.
Yeah, I would like to see her age a little bit. I think obviously what she did in the film was fine, but I think we should breathe. I don't even want to see an X-Men movie for like 10 years, it feels like, after this, let alone a spinoff from this. I think the room is there. We kind of talked about it, like, is this going to be a Latino New Mutants? Like, it's like, oh, it's there to grow. I want time to mourn this amazing movie. Like, let me enjoy this before we start doing spinoffs and more sequel talks.
No, this is one of the first films that I've seen in a while where I was like, I'm complete. If you look at Batman v Superman, you look at Deadpool, you look at the Star Wars films, they're all building up. The Marvel films, they're all building up to that next film. And this is the first time in a long time where I was like, oh, I'm done. This is a complete movie. And it's a surprise to get sometimes.
Yeah, because, you know, there is a lot of still, like, crazy mythos that they didn't explain. Like, there's a lot of things that in the past that happened for them that they didn't get into. But that's fine. I didn't need every answer in this film. No, give me what they did. Like, I agree with you. I feel like I had a good meal. I'm full. Thank you for giving me – because, yeah, we live in an era where everything's just spinoffs to the continuation of this. No, this was a complete – like, it's a one-off. It's like a one-shot comic, and I was happy about that.
And it's gonna really fuck up a lot of movies after this.
Oh, yeah. I feel bad for any superhero. I've been really excited for Wonder Woman and Justice League all year. But now I'm like, can I wait? Can you guys come out next year? Because I don't know how you guys are going to compete. I feel bad for the damn Marvel films this year.
Because you watch Logan and I'm super excited for Spider-Man. But I'm like, oh, this was designed for 8-year-olds.
Yeah, you're going to have to, especially because you know how I'm not a big fan of like the MCU. So to go to Guardians of the Galaxy, where as beautiful as the movie's going to be, it's going to be a giant movie for kids and it's going to be
chunky. Whoa. Guardians of the Galaxy has a lot more dick and fart jokes than you give it credit for.
Yes, they're there, but it's not going to be this. And that's the problem where I like movies like this as much as shit Batman v Superman got. I thought it was a mature, like a political thriller at times. So I was like, ooh, there's something to bite into. This had so much to go off of. And I'm like, I don't know where the superhero genre can go after this, because this is really what everyone talked about Deadpool last year. This is how I feel about Logan this year, is I don't know how we're going to follow this up, because I want all R-rated superhero films now. Like, damn, this was so good.
Wolverine works, because I don't want to be stuck in this thing like, oh, we need more R-rated superhero films.
We need them to work for who gets them.
Right. The Wolverine is a film that works as an R-rated film. Like this one, like they wanted to go out in a blaze of glory. They went out in a blaze of glory. All the tricks are empty. All the, you know, the toolbox is empty. Every bullet was shot out of the chamber. Like they left nothing on the table making this film, and it's been a while. It's been a while since I've seen anything like this in the superhero genre where they did leave everything out there. Hugh Jackman was, you always think that stuff is like smoke and mirrors, and Hugh Jackman was like, we're going to make the film when we get the right script, you know, because you saw all the other previous Wolverine movies. He's like, oh no, we're just not going to make it until we get the script right. And they delayed it a little bit and they got the script right.
Oh, yeah. The script was amazing. There's little tweaks that I'm like, some of the villain stuff. We kind of talked about one of the villains in this movie that I'm like, bro, you didn't need to be here. I think that's like the only negative thing I can come up with script-wise. Pacing was fine. Action was fine.
Because it's a long-ass movie.
It was a long movie, but I think there's one point, because there was a lot of silence in this film, that I'm like, okay, this is dragging. And then as soon as that thought came into my head, bam, like throat slit. And I'm like, oh, never mind. Action's fine, good, all over again. So that's what it's for. As long as it is, it did not feel the 2 hours 15 it was.
The villain in this is flawed, but compared to mouthless Deadpool and giant robot Silver Samurai, it's 1,000 times better. And then how they it's weird because this movie is 2 hours and 30 minutes long, and then there are times where there's just suddenness to it where you just get shocked and you're like, oh, here we are.
Yeah, I think I know what scene you're talking about, but I think that suddenness was like, it was building up for a second there. I was just like, oh boy, oh boy. Oh, we're doing a big confession. Oh boy. And then it happened and all this. I'm like, oh no. But yeah, everything that happened, as oddly paced as it was, like when something like what we're talking about or some of the ending stuff or even some of the action stuff, I'm like, oh shit, this is happening. Oh, here it is. It is so cool to see something like that.
And this is a movie, Logan, this movie right here is a movie that we are going to talk to you about again, because we want to do another podcast about this. This film comes out on March 3rd. So the week after March 3rd, we're going to do a spoiler review of this where we can just talk about all the different scenes with you, because there's one scene in this where I'm just like, this is cinema right here. And it just, I was just like, ah, and just from shot for shot and just the way it ends, I was like, this is filmmaking gloriousness.
That happened to me throughout the whole film.
Well, no, but this is where I was like, this one scene where I was like, oh, they're going for their Oscar moment. I mean, it was bookended by two blockbuster moments, but there was a small smidge right there where you're like, oh, that's the sweet spot of Oscar goldness right there. And I was just like, oh.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I swear on everything, with all this Deadpool getting a Golden Globe nomination and that slight Oscar buzz, if this movie is not in contention, if not mentioned, I will be angry, because this is an Oscar movie. This was Oscar gold, from the drama that happened to how it was handled. This was like a hell or high water for me this year. If something like that can get nominated, Logan should be there next year.
It's weird, because I don't ever really put the superhero films in Oscar consideration, where this one, like The Dark Knight was like the first one where I was like, a lot of goodness, a lot of itching and scratching on the inside of Oscarness. And you guys can't see this right now, but I'm just like, when I'm trying to talk about The Dark Knight, like it's all my insides like itch, because there's some tingling with that film. And this has Dark Knight-esque to it. But I'm trying to think of how I feel about this one, because this is a tough one. I said that this is a top five film, and my list of top five films are, I have Superman 1, I have Spider-Man 2, I have The Dark Knight 3, I have Iron Man 4, and then I have The Guardians of the Galaxy 5. And that's my list. And I'm like, one of these is going to get bounced out. And I'm leaning towards either Guardians of the Galaxy or Iron Man getting bounced out. And it ranking in at like five, because I feel like Iron Man sets the bar. I can't kick Iron Man out, because that's the
first. I would have got rid of Iron Man before Guardians, because I think Guardians does a little bit more for the genre. I know Iron Man.
You wouldn't have Guardians, because I mean, like in my top 10,
I think Iron Man's such a generic film compared to some of the other ones on your list, though. I know it kicks open the door, but I think you putting it next to some of the other films, I'm like, Iron Man just seems so weird here.
I don't know. I'm losing words here, because Iron Man is before Disney. It's a Paramount film.
It feels like it.
T.M. Powell says this. This looks like an independent film compared to the Disney products that they're putting out right now. And the reason why Iron Man is where it is because of how I felt when I left the theater. Like, there was power to that screening for me. And like, I was like, I've never felt like this coming out of a theater before. Guardians of the Galaxy gave me that feeling again, because it's kind of fun, but the dance number at the end kind of kills it for me. You know, if we're going to have certain moments here and there, but I think the film that's going to drop out of my top 10 is X-Men 2. I'm going to take that out, because you got Logan in there, and that's your X-Men. That's your best version of Wolverine ever. And there can't be, like, I think there could be two top 10 Wolverine movies, But I don't think so. I think there's other stuff in there that needs to be there.
Yeah, this like finished my like I've been waiting for the film to finish my like superhero trifecta. I've had Watchmen, I've had Batman v Superman. Logan is here. Logan is in my trifecta of like these mature, R-rated, hardcore like films I needed, and I got it.
Batman v Superman. Like, I don't really know what you're talking. Like, you can't compare Batman v Superman to Logan.
I can, and I honestly I will put them as I like them equal. But no, I think they're.
I'm like, where's the mute button? I was like. Click.
Yeah, you can keep that. Trust me, I had to try not to roll my eyes as you're describing Iron Man 1 as an indie film. Fuck that. No, no, I definitely think this is like the movie I've been waiting for. I really like what it did. It really does rank up to what I look for in a superhero film. Because trust me, I've skipped most of them. Any Spider-Man film, don't love it. Really, the X-Men film has kind of been my go-to. And I don't know. This is it. I'm so happy Logan's there because now I have like... my three favorite superhero movies instead of just two because I've only
and Watchmen's not a superhero movie. Stop calling it one.
Oh, I almost certain those are all superheroes in that film.
It's just a trashy film. Actually, the book is trashy. The film, you can't help it because it's its own.
Yeah, I'm like, he's adapting trash.
Like, he's adapting trash.
He can only make it a high glossy slow mo trash.
I mean, I sold lots of copies of The Watchmen, but I just Watchmen's not where I want my superhero. Like this is the thing. It's like, you know me, I'm kind of the moral compass kind of guy when I like my superhero films. But like, Wolverine is just a full blown brutal killer, but there was still had that like, okay, I don't know how to. I don't want to have a big. I don't know if I can handle a big heavy debate at this at 11:04 at night talking about Wolverine. But there was. So, you got the Wolverine. He's a crazy killer, and he's done lots of bad things. But there's one guy that you want on your side when there's even badder people trying to kill you, and that's the Wolverine.
Yeah, I think this movie really did show that, like, you can have, like, a character you don't love that isn't the most moral superhero and actually show that there's a heart to it. Even though they are ripping out other people's hearts, there's still something there, which I don't think a lot of superhero films, even the ones I've listed that I love, they don't do good people, quote-unquote, very well, where this was not a good person, but they show that he can still be good. And there's a slight redemption tale to this that I actually really enjoy with it.
Yeah, I don't think any of the good people in this film have a good day in this film.
No, I'm the bad people don't, the good people don't, and that's what I like is I know we talk about some of these films do need to be a little bit more uplifting, but I don't want to. I don't want to be happy all the time. I can watch a cartoon for that. No, I want something like this to challenge me and to make me think. Because if I walk away from everything as a popcorn superhero film, then they don't do anything.
Well, that's not the point. That's not the point. Because this is this right here, and then I don't really want to get into this debate, but like, this is where, like, Batman and Logan and Wolverine are supposed to be. They're supposed to be in this territory. That's where they're supposed to be. But Superman is not supposed to be in that territory. He's the different guy. He's the lighter guy.
I don't think he ever has been.
Okay. Well, you know, we'll agree to disagree.
I mean, he snapped one person's neck one time. Make him a killer. I mean,
he killed the whole entire race. He's like, Krypton, you had your time. Go burn in hell.
Wasteful people. God, I hate Kryptonians. Don't get me started on my Kryptonian rant that they literally ruined their own planet and we're supposed to be like, oh, they should all come here. No. God, my Kryptonian rant. We'll save that for another Superman movie later on.
In the
on
comic where, books, they all live in a tiny little bottle.
Oh, God. Because that's what we really need more of this. Yeah, because doesn't Zod live in a little like?
No,
little...
he lives in the Phantom Zone.
He's just a piece of glass floating around.
It's Kandor, the city in the bottle.
Kandor, yes, I forgot about that. Because they actually do mention Kandor in Batman v Superman.
They do?
Yep. Things that people don't notice because they just want to roll their eyes at the movie. Yeah, the computer, when Lex Luthor gets in there, she calls it, she goes, oh, Zod of Kandor. It's literally so quick, but I'm like, oh, Kandor reference.
That's cool. And okay, number one, I wasn't rolling my eyes the whole entire time. I watched the damn movie. Son of a bitch. God, you're right next to that brave little toaster. I'm calling you a son of a bitch.
Oh, man. I can't believe we had a brave little toaster discussion one day.
What are you going to rate this? Is this a 9? I'm giving this 9.5 across the board out of 10.
Yeah, I this is an A movie. It was almost an A+, and then we kind of talked about this like villain thing that I was just like, eh, that really did knock it down for me. From like an A+ to just an A. It's still nothing bad. It's still like, yeah, if I was gonna give it a number, it is like a 9 out of 10. There's little like villain things that I would have loved to see, and maybe a happier ending ish. Just actually, I like
now
the
ending. The ending was perfect.
Yeah, yeah. I guess there was a good happiness to it, but it just felt like, oh, like I want more, but then I want no more. I'm so conflicted about it, and I think that's what I like. I think that's why I said it made me think, and I have emotions. There's been movies that I even love from other brands, and I'm like, and I've seen it, and it's done. Like John Wick 2. Thought it was fun, but I was like, all right, I've seen John Wick 2 now.
The only reason why I'm comparing John Wick is because it's an R-rated action movie that we saw last week.
I'm not comparing
them.
I'm just,
but I mean, like,
I'm
that's
saying how I left a film where I'm like, okay, cool. I saw John Wick 2. It's done, whatever. Where Logan, I'm thinking about it. I'm going to go to sleep and wake up and be like, oh my God, but what about that one scene? I don't get that too often. And I was really happy that Logan actually let me walk away from a theater, because we're so desensitized as critics and movie viewers where we see sometimes – I watch 4 movies a day sometimes where I'm like, okay, cool. I've seen all these movies where this one, it made me think I don't want to watch another movie for a couple of days now so I can actually fully enjoy this.
Yeah, I'm not watching anything this weekend. I'm just going to let that settle. Probably not next week. It's like, no, I'm just going to wave it off.
Thankfully, next week I have Get Out, which is a horror film. And that's my genre, so I'll be excited about that. But that gives me enough time to like mourn Logan's amazing film.
Hi, EJ. You have a good weekend, my friend. I am going to feverishly edit this podcast because I want to get it up by 4:30 on Friday when all the reviews are going to drop. And that's going to be really interesting to see what this comes out at a Rotten Tomatoes, because me bitching about John Wick and the Lego Batman scores, like if it's even 1% less than John Wick or Lego Batman, I'm going to fucking go shink shink on a lot of media critics.
Oh, wait till you see the reviews where this is too nihilistic, it's too bloody. Oh, I can't wait to read those pussy reviews. I'm gonna laugh at them because this movie was perfect.
That's where we're ending, my friend. Take care.
You too.
Hey Matt, we survived another episode. Oh no!
Once again, there are several ways to continue the conversation after the show. Follow us on Twitter @monkeys_robots. You can look at all our silly photos on Instagram @monkeysfightingrobots. You can follow me on Twitter @MatthewSardo. My co-host EJ is also on Twitter @EJChristWithAK. The biggest compliment we receive is when the subscriber number goes up on Blog Talk Radio, our new home. Check it out. It's worth it. If you have a chance, we'd greatly appreciate a review of our show on iTunes. As always, the best way to listen to the show is on our website, monkeysfightingrobots.com.
Okay, Lunchbox, let's try this again.
There are so many people that made the 111th episode of Monkeys Fighting Robots a success. Special shout out to my co-host, EJ Marino, for putting up with me.
It's been a challenge because of all this Logan excitement that you had. It's wearing on me.
And it's in person tonight. Jessica Wynn designed the Monkeys Fighting Robots logo. Are you a monkey or are you a robot? The staff of Visual Realm built our website and kept us up and running. To all my friends, family, and the interweb, thank you very much for your support. I'm Matt Sardo, and this is Monkeys Fighting Robots.